item, this item number three, is the presentation by the DOD on the findings of the ministerial task team on the procurement of the interferon drug from Cuba by the department. So that's the main item for today. And then the other two, mainly in-house or housekeeping items. I think item number four, it is a change that was necessitated by the fact that one of the meetings where we suggested that it be a physical meeting somewhere in Pretoria or Gauteng. On that day, there's a debate on the state of the nation address. So it may not, you know, sit when. Some of us will be expected to be in Cape Town. On that account, we have revised, we have simply swapped the items, but I will introduce the issue when we get to item number four. And then item number five is just the usual matter, consideration and adoption of outstanding minutes. There's only one set, it's the minute of the 8th of December. Colleagues, I welcome all of you to this meeting, this being the first meeting of the year. I wish everything of the best for all of you as we start this new year. We've been a good team, and we stay true to our commitment to the Constitution. And for apologies, colleagues, let me, Brian, do you have apologies?
Yes, Chair. We do have an apology, Chair, from Minister. She is currently on leave until the 31st, but she has indicated that the Deputy Minister is delegated to lead the delegation.
Yes, no. Thank you very much, Brian. I've heard that the minister is indisposed. And Minister Lemula, Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, is acting in that position. And but he's not in the meeting today. He did indicate that the DM would be leading the delegation. All right. So, DM, welcome to you, sir. Good morning. Deputy Minister? Okay. The Deputy Minister doesn't look like he's in the meeting already. Okay. Let me just finish the apologies before I welcome everyone else. Is that the only apology, right?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. And Mr. Murray, is there an apology? I see your hand.
No, sir. It's not only about an apology. It's only about the agenda.
Oh, it's only about the agenda. Okay. Maybe let me take a comment on the agenda.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just in terms of the agenda, I just wanted to get clarity. First of all, in terms of the Minister, it's obviously disappointing that she's not here, but if she is sick, I don't know the extension of her illness. If she's been, substituted by Minister Lemula, it means that it must be something serious. So maybe somewhere along the line we will just get more information so that we can all be more empathetic and maybe sympathetic to her and extend our...
Do you really want to discuss the apology?
No, I said about the agenda.
Please, let's focus on the agenda.
Okay, right. But that's part of the agenda, is that the minister's absence. And then secondly, just on the agenda, I am just concerned that whilst we were promised the report by both the previous minister and current minister of defence,
are you not preempting? Are you not preempting the item?
No, well, obviously you will be able to respond to this.
Let's not preempt the item.
I'm not preempting. I'm just looking at the report.
Mr. Mare, the agenda was adopted when we adopted the program.
Yes.
Okay. I was actually not expecting any comment on the agenda as it were. And there's, I allow comments if it is a new item and members were not aware about it. So it remains as it was adopted.
Yes, it was adopted, but the report was also promised and we didn't get the report.
No, let's read the agenda, Mr. Mare.
Okay, so in other words, you overrule me. Thank you.
Yes, let's do that.
Thank you for that, but it doesn't
matter. So we're still on item number one. Just take one step at a time, and otherwise we'll trip and fall. Right. So we finished the apologies. I want to welcome. I see on the platform that there is Professor Reeves from SAPRA is in the meeting. Professor Reeves and I don't know who else from SAPRA is in the meeting, but I welcome the prof and the head delegation. I also thank you so much. I also see that Mr. Lawrence, the AG office is present, is represented by Lawrence van Vuren, and I also see Mbali Zotesi, and so those are the two colleagues from AGSA, the Auditor General Office of South Africa that I am able to see on the platform. Colleagues, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you. And the Chief of the South African Defence, but before I go to the Chief, I see that the Deputy Minister is on the platform. Deputy Minister?
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning to members of the Oversight Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And SecDef, I not seen SecDef.
I am connected, Chair.
Oh, you are connected. Good morning.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And also, Chair, just to say that the members of the Ministerial Task Team are also connected.
Oh, yes. And just before I go to the members of the ministerial test team, I see that the Chief of the Defence Force is in the meeting, and I don't know who else from that environment you would know, SecDef.
Well, we have also proposed that the Surgeon General be here and Dr. Kennel Munisi also be connected.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Chief, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. I am with the Surgeon General and Dr. Munisi.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, General. All right, and I see other senior managers in the department, the CFO, the chief log, and so on. Thank you very much and welcome to all of you. And colleagues, let me also welcome the members of the special, the ministerial task team, and chaired by the former, well, chaired by Mr. Zolile Ngagana. And I know there is also Dr. Cassius Lubisi, and I don't see other members, but they will introduce, don't introduce the other members. Oh, there's also Mr. Billy Masetla. Those are the three members of the task team. I see, I think it completes their complement on the other side, but of course they are supported by the team. So colleagues, this is the team, and I welcome everyone else who are part of the delegation, and as led by the different heads that I've just mentioned, or different leaders of the delegation that I've just mentioned. All right, colleagues, let's quickly then go to item three, that is the briefing by the department. Let's allow the briefing first because it's an item on the agenda, and then I will entertain any concern arising out of it, so that I don't bedevil the item. All right, colleagues, SecDef, but before SecDef, the minister, the deputy minister is in the meeting, representing the ministry. Over to you, sir.
Chairperson, and honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans, good morning and thank you for the opportunity. Chair, let me just quickly say the following before I hand over to the ministerial task team to present to the Oversight Committee the report on the work they have done around the procurement of interferon by the department. Firstly, to say that, Chair, as you have already remarked, it is indeed regrettable that the minister, for reasons beyond her control, is not present today to table this report to the Portfolio Committee. The minister's office is aware of a request that came from one of the committee members that as the report is being tabled, there is a desire that the report be released to the Portfolio Committee. That matter is a matter which has been properly discussed, and we concluded that it is only the right thing to do to leave the release of the report to the minister's prerogative on her return back to the office. Reason being that the task team, as members are aware, was established as a ministerial task team, noting, of course, that it is an inquiry which the minister undertook following discussions on the matter by the Portfolio Committee. Nevertheless, the report is report.
Do you have an objection to setting your veto on?
I can set my video on, Chair, where the signal, the reception gets weaker.
Can you turn it off?
That's right. So, as I was saying, Chair, the decision to release the report will be made by the minister. But we do take cognizance that the inquiry was conducted following the concerns of the Oversight Committee as well. The second point, Chair, that I thought I should just quickly make
attention, to draw the attention of the committee to, is that the report, the copy of the report that was released to the committee was under the auspices of the Department of Defense. It is a procedural mistake that we made. The report is the report of the ministerial task team. It is not the report of the Department of Defense, because the Department of Defense was or is the subject of the investigation, and the report could not be a report of the Department of Defense. It is the report of the MTT and will be presented to the Portfolio Committee by the MTT. There are, of course, issues which we can, as the Ministry, comment upon at the end of the presentation following the discussion of the committee. We're very much willing to share whatever else from the side of the Ministry that will be of use and will be appropriate to be shared with the oversight. With that said, Chair, and the earlier introduction you have made of members of the task team, that is Mr. Zolile Ngakane, the chair of the task team, Mr. Billy Maseka, and Dr. Kesha Slubisi, I will then hand over to the task team to present the report. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DM. Over to you, Chairperson.
If I may come in, I do apologize. It's Professor Rees here, because we would like to, as SAPRA, raise some concerns before the presentation, if we may.
Oh, yes. You know, your injunction, Prof, it reminds me of a note that I received from the AG's office in relation to one of the findings. And I will also give them the opportunity to read it onto the record. Maybe that they are in the meeting. No, it's fine. I will grant you the opportunity, Prof, after the presentation. Thanks. All right. I now invite the chair of the ministerial task team.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks to the honorable members of the portfolio committee. I would like to just indicate and point out that in a classified internal memorandum that was subsequently leaked to the commercial media by unknown persons, Major General Elsie Ford accused the SANDF of irregular processes during the procurement of Heberon Alpha R2B human recombinant Alpha 2B interferon, a drug procured from the Republic of Cuba by the SANDF, in its readiness preparations to fight against COVID-19 as the last line of defense in South Africa's marshaled forces against the pandemic. Major General Ford questioned whether there was any need to procure the interferon. He questioned the period in which this was decided, the period in which the interferon was actually procured. The approval of the use of interferon, the processes followed during the procurement of interferon, the delivery and storage of the interferon, the payment for the interferon, and whether or not the procurement of interferon was conducted within the relevant districts. then Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, Ms. Nosiviwe Mapisa Nakula, took a decision to appoint a ministerial trustee to investigate a much broader set of allegations of fraud, corruption, and misuse of state funds against the Department of Defense, including the allegations made by Major General Ford, as I've indicated. Therefore, the LTT is charged with the responsibility to prepare a report and support recommendations to the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. As has already been indicated, the members of the task team are three members, myself, Surile Nagani, as chair, Mr. Billy Masetra, and Dr. Cassius Ibisi. To support the MTT, we have a secretariat leader of Major Wanda Zondi from the DOD, Mr. Lesego Mdao, who comes from NICO, and Tebogo Tike from DERCO. Later, we were provided with Advocate Vera Kala from DOD. The ministerial task team is expected to establish the veracity of fraud and corruption allegations in the procurement and maintenance programs in the South African Army, the South African Air Force, Logistics Division, South African Military Health Services, the Human Resources Division, the Joint Operations, the veracity of allegations of assassinations and death threats against members of the DOD, and any other related allegations which may be brought to the MTT attention during the inquiry. The report we are submitting today is a sub-report of MTT's broader report. The current focus indicated in the agenda is on the findings made in regards to allegations of irregular processes during the procurement of interferon alpha 2B from the Republic of Cuba. Now, the ministerial task team, because of pressure of time, divided its work into three work streams, and the matters which are related to the procurement of interferon B are dealt with by Webstream 3, which Dr. Ndishi was the principal investigator of. So, Chair, I would request that I hand over to Dr. Ndishi to proceed with giving the more details of the report with your permission. Thank you. Dr. Lewis.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans and other colleagues, particularly from SAPRA and the Office of the AG. I would like us to we've got the presentation, I think it's controlled from the Portfolio Committee Secretariat. If they can go to slide B, it's a slide 2. With the picture. The slide after this.
The next slide?
The slide after the head slide. Yes, that slide. We want to ensure that we speak of the same, about the same.
Please go back to the pictorial slide. Thank you.
We will consistently throughout this presentation refer to a vial. We wanted all of us to be clear what we are talking about. we were tasked with looking at that, and we've indicated to the Minister of Defence when she took office that our mandate is much broader than the interferon issues, much, much broader. The interferon issue actually is a small part of our work. We adopted an inquisitorial approach, which means that we were on a fact-finding mission. We're trying to establish what happened when and who did what, and the relationship between various players in this saga. We did not adopt an adversarial approach. In other words, we did not have accused, nor did we have suspects. Because we did not ourselves know who exactly was involved and what they did. So our approach is inquisitorial in nature. We went on an extensive review of documents, various documents, including reports, including policy documents, legislation. We looked at email trails. We looked at letters. Correspondence, all manner of documents we went through. We interviewed key stakeholders, some of whom are in the meeting today. We have a sworn statement by one member from Protechnic at one of the companies of Arms Corps. Next slide, please. Now, we thought it is important to place this situation, this MTT investigation, in its proper context. Dr. Zhang Xixian treated three patients with a novel manifestation of pneumonia in Wuhan City in the Hebei Province of the People's Republic of China, the 26th and the 27th of December 2019, and sounded the alarm bell to Wuhan City, the Province of Hebei, the People's Republic of China, and essentially the world, even though the announcement was not made immediately. COVID-19 caused by the novel virus, coronavirus SARS-CoV-2 had landed. The World Health Organization was caught off guard, just like all of us were caught off guard. I don't think there's a single person on earth who can claim that they were not caught off guard. They were. All of us were caught off guard. On the 30th of January 2020, the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as a public health emergency of international concern. On the 11th of March, it was only on the 11th of March 2020 that the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as the global pandemic. The Director General of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, gave a four-point strategy to nations to follow, calling on nations to innovate. A global war against an unknown enemy had been declared. So, in the view of the task team, when assessing strategies and tactics adopted during this period, it is best to caution against evaluating wartime actions against peacetime criteria. And this is a very difficult balance to strike, we must admit. Next slide, please. The outbreak of COVID-19 caused widespread uncertainty throughout the world, with no one knowing how effectively to counter the pandemic. No country, and we mean no country, knew how to protect its citizens. It's in this context that the South African National Defense Force began exploring ways in which to protect its members, especially given the prospect of members being employed to combat the viral army of SARS-CoV-2 in the residential and commercial areas throughout the length and breadth of the country, as it did happen later on. We learned that the SNDF had anticipated The Ministry of Home and Council took it as its sole responsibility to take extraordinary measures to heighten force protection against an unknown killer virus. In and around March 2020, the MCC began discussing the then impending pandemic and how to protect its own members from the novel coronavirus. In this regard, the MCC made contact with, among others, the Cuban Revolutionary Armed Forces and the People's Liberation Army of the People's Republic of China through virtual platforms to explore ways of preparing their respective militaries in their fight against COVID-19. Next slide, please. In and about February 2020, the then Surgeon General of the SANDF, Lieutenant General Dr. Zola Dabula, visited Cuba. His visit was not to look at COVID-19. His visit was about something else. There were issues, interactions, is the right word to use, emanating from the SANDF young military cadets that were studying medicine in Cuba, who were worried that their qualification might not be recognized by the HPCSA Health Professions Council on their return to the country, because there were some disagreements related to the internship which they had to serve, the question whether to serve it in Cuba or to serve it in South Africa. Because of various failed attempts to deal with this matter, Lieutenant General Dabula, the SG, went to Cuba, accompanied by the then president of the Health Professions Council, Dr. José Letlape, to try to resolve this matter and to give confidence to the cadets that what they are hearing is not from the SANDF, to assure them it comes from the Health Professions Council itself. During this period, as they were trying to resolve this matter, General Dabula informs us that fortuitously they started discussing the impending global pandemic as they were watching it in China. At that time, there was no case of coronavirus in South Africa. The Cubans indicated that it had landed. The coronavirus had landed in Cuba, but they were able to, they are dealing with it using interferon alpha 2b, and they're using it as an immune booster or immune modulator on members of the Revolutionary Armed Forces as well as the general public. General Dabula and his delegation were shown preliminary studies on the efficacy of the interferon, as well as being given anecdotal evidence how the drug kept hospitalization and death among members of the Revolutionary Armed Forces, the general Cuban population at a bare minimum. Further, the delegation was taken to the Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology, the CIGB, the laboratory center which produces various drugs in Cuba, including interferon alpha 2. General Dabula, based on his exposure in Cuba, on his return to South Africa, advised the Military Command Council, the MCC, to consider adopting the use of the interferon alpha 2b for members of the SANDF who were preparing for deployment into residential and commercial areas. Next slide, please. Now, following General Dabula's briefing to the MCC, several virtual meetings were held between the SANDF and the Cuban Revolutionary Armed Forces, the CIGB, on the treatment using interferon. The meetings were led by the respective Surgeons General of Cuba and South Africa. The first meeting was attended on the South African side by, among others, the then Chief of the SANDF, General Zoli Shoki, Lieutenant General Dabula, Colonel Dr. Thabo Mnisi, and a number of independent and reserve force doctors, Brigadier attended from the same room with the Cuban delegation in Alberta. The SNDF, the then chief of the SNDF was not present, however, in subsequent meetings held on virtual platforms between the Cuban Revolutionary Armed Forces as well as meetings with the People's Liberation Army of the People's Republic of China. General Shoker informed the MTT that he had asked Lieutenant General Davula to invite representatives of the Health Department to attend the first and subsequent virtual meetings with the Cuban Revolutionary Armed Forces and the CIG, but no representatives from the Department of Health ever attended the meeting. The meetings, we were informed. On the 23rd of March 2020, His Excellency, next slide, please. His Excellency the President announced a national lockdown from 26 March 2020 following the declaration of a national state of disaster by the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs on the 15th of March 2020. This was accompanied by the deployment of 2,820 members of the SANDF to support SAPS, South African Police Service, in the fight against COVID-19, with an addition of 73,180 more members of the SANDF by April 22, 2020. The Defence Force deployment against COVID-19 was named Operation Motlela, which is to lock in, playing on the term lockdown, and consisted of various aspects, including inter alia security, law enforcement, water provision, engineering support, and medical and health support. So it was not just to walk the streets and enforce laws. The SANDF employment of its members had various elements to it. It is these members, these 76,000 members, that were deployed in support of the SAPS with a view to flattening the SARS-CoV-2 infections that the Military Command Council of the SANDF was concerned with. Further, the leadership of the SANDF informed the MTT that it was understood that the principle of rotation was to be adopted as Operation Notlela unfolded. In practice, this meant that the actual number of deployed members could grow significantly depending on the number of future rotations, because at that time it was not known how the virus will behave. Next slide, please. Now, in his internal memorandum of 28 September 2020, Major General Leslie Ford states that, and I quote, "It is not clear who created the demand for the interferon, and that it is understood that said requirement was not initiated by SAMS, and in bracket JDP 003-2004. This JDP document is an internal policy document of the SANDF, of the Department of Defense, rather, it's not just of the SANDF, it's the whole Department of Defense. This document is known as, it's titled Processes and Procedures for the Procurement and Sales in Respect of Commercial Goods and Services. Now, Chapter 3 of this document stipulates a number of requirements for the submission of needs. In this case, the need we are talking about is the need identified to bring in interferon. The document stipulates that, I quote, "It is the responsibility of clients to establish and state their actual requirement, that is, what goods or services must be procured. It is accepted that clients have established that the requirements are really required," close quote. The document further stipulates information that should be supplied for the need that has been identified. And this includes a detailed description of the need, specifications, quantities, delivery requirements, specific suppliers, and availability of funds. looked at this matter, the allegation from the side of the MTT, we found that the allegation made by General Ford that firms, the South African Military Health Service of the South African National Defense Force, which was the client in this regard, the allegation that firms did not submit such a need in terms of JDP 0003/2004 is partly substantiated. It was the MCC made a finding. Lieutenant General Davula, who, after being briefed by the Cuban Revolutionary Armed Forces, the Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnologies, CIGB, who identified the need in his capacity as Surgeon General. However, the MTT finds that the Lieutenant General Davula did not cause the submission of the need in terms of the policy document JDP 0003/2004. Instead, next slide. Instead, General Davula briefed the MCC, the Ministry of Manpower, the highest decision-making body in the SAA, and recommended the procurement of interferon from Cuba. In fact, the MCC confirms this in a later statement early last year on the 28th of January 2021. The MCC firmly stated, and we quote, that as the military command, we want to put it on record that the Surgeon General, the only authority for the medical protection, is the MCC approved Lieutenant General Davula's recommendation to procure interferon alpha 2 from Cuba. So if it is the body that approved, it is the MCC that approved. The then Surgeon General submitted that the Cubans made it clear to him and his delegation that interferon was not a vaccine, but was an immune booster or immune modulator. So the question of vaccine versus immune booster does not arise. The SANDF, from what we can find, was fully aware of the difference between the two. We are being the then SG submitted that the Cubans made rather the use of interferon, sorry, for the treatment of COVID-19 has, however, not been approved by the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, SAHPRA. Therefore, in regard to the allegations made by General Ford, we find that the allegation that the the drug is not SAHPRA approved for use within the Republic of South Africa, close quote, is substantiated. We find that General Ford was correct in this allegation. The drug indeed is not approved. We wish to submit as the MTT. Now, we'll come to SAHPRA's interaction with the interferon. We had a lengthy discussion with SAHPRA to try to get a sense of their role as well as how they approached the matter of interferon. SAHPRA informed us that they received an application from SAMS for the use of the bulk stock of the interferon on the 27th of August 2020. The application, which did not show any quantities and contained no information on the clinical benefit of interferon, was subsequently rejected by SAHPRA. However, on the 5th of October 2020, SAHPRA approved
approved an application from CERMS to use 10 vials of the interferon for the treatment of a single patient in terms of Section 21 of the Medicines and Related Substances Act. Again, on 21st October 2020, SAHPRA received another application for the authorization of the use of the bulk stock. Again, with no mention of quantities and other relevant information. This application was also rejected. SAHPRA eventually visited the South African Military Health Base Depot in Pretoria on the 29th of January 2021, with a view to discussing the arrival of the interferon from Cuba without SAHPRA's approval. SAHPRA informed the MTT that on that occasion, their inspectors were accompanied by two officers from the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, DCI, and known as the HOPS. Next slide. SAHPRA, in its engagement with the MTT, claimed that they had written several letters and email messages to them to discuss the way forward in relation to interferon alpha 2B to no avail. SAHPRA and CERMS again met on the 9th of February 2020 to take the discussion about interferon alpha 2B. The follow-up meeting was again held between the two organizations on the 12th of February 2021. At this meeting, an agreement was reached that CERMS would submit a clinical trial application for the use of interferon on 8,000 members of the defense. Upon receipt of the clinical trial, SAHPRA would fast-track the review in the same manner it did with the COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial. SAHPRA committed to submit on its part the clinical trial application on the 11th of March 2021, which deadline regrettably was not met. SAHPRA then wrote to CERMS demanding an action plan in regard to the interferon, failing which SAHPRA would move in to seize and destroy the interferon as provided for in the Medicine and Related Substances Act. CERMS responded to SAHPRA's letter on the 31st of March 2020, giving an undertaking to provide the required action plan by 9 April and a clinical trial protocol by the 1st of May 2021. Next slide. Upon CERMS' submission of the clinical trial application, SAHPRA found that the application still had significant information gaps. Thereafter, the two teams met with a view to clarifying the regulatory requirements for the clinical trial application. Then, ultimately submitted a revised clinical trial on the 9th of July 2021, and SAHPRA reviewed the application. Again, it found gaps, which the regulator communicated to CERMS in writing, with a deadline set for resubmission set for 29 July 2021, which deadline again was not met. During the MTT's discussion with SAHPRA on the 21st of September, the regulator informed the MTT that CERMS had been given a new deadline of 1 October 2020 to respond to the queries that had been contained in their letter of 19 July. CERMS did not meet the deadline of 1 October 2021. As some of the requirements of SAHPRA required lengthy supply chain management processes. Colonel Dr. Thabo Mnisi informed the MTT, who is the leader of the CERMS team that was dealing with this matter of interferon alpha 2, informed the MTT that the primary requirement CERMS has to meet is the appointment of a clinical research organization, which will help answer some of the queries SAHPRA had. In this regard, the Secretary for Defense wrote to the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer at National Treasury, requesting permission to deviate from normal SDM processes in the appointment of the clinical research organization, which the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer turned down. Next slide. Leon Chichi has subsequently learned that SAPRA had withdrawn the initial offer to consider a clinical trial application for 8,000 SNDF members and had threatened to destroy the medication if it is not returned to Cuba, which clearly was a major escalation in the fraught relations between the SNDF and SAPRA. There was now a major risk, as the expiry date of the interferon were approaching ever so close. Another matter that SAPRA raised with the SNDF in a letter reportedly written on the 22nd of July 2022, but which of course we didn't see, is the port of entry of the interferon alpha 2b. In terms of Regulation 12 sub 1 of the Regulations for the Medicines and Related Substances Act, no one can import medicines into South Africa unless those medicines come through the following ports of entry: Port Tambo International Airport, Cape Town International Airport, Cape Town Harbour, Durban International Airport, which is Kinshasa International Airport, Durban Harbour, Abeha International Airport, which is now the Chief David Stearman International Airport, and Abeha Harbour. As can be seen from this list, which we have just read, Air Force Base Waterloo is not one of the ports of entry through which imported medicines can enter the country. As a result, the MTT finds that the importation of the first two consignments through Air Force Base Waterloo was in violation of Regulation 12, sub 1 of the Regulations for the Medicines and Related Substances. Now we come through the matter of ideology and medicine control. This is a matter that has been raised with us over and over again in our interactions with various senior members of the South African National Assembly. Every time we try to engage with the matter of the relationship between the SNDF SEMS and UP and SAPRA, even that they are both state institutions, and the constitutions enjoin to continuously work in a cooperative manner in order to resolve matters, and that they should not take each other to court, and they should rather resolve matters peacefully. And if they are not able to do so, these matters should, anyone can raise an intergovernmental complaint in line with the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. Now, these senior members of the SNDF allege that SAPRA seems to be doing the bidding for the dominant pharmaceutical monopolies of oligarchy that consistently seeks to stifle any competition, especially one that unconventionally comes from the likes of the Republic of Cuba or any other source outside the dominant Western axis led by U.S. and European pharmaceuticals. This was categorized by the senior members of the SNDF as part of an ideological slant that has consistently dominated the pharma industry since the dawn of freedom in South Africa in 1994. The MTT did not have evidence, or did not see any evidence, that SAPRA was dealing with the matter of interferon because it is adopting an ideological slant supporting Western pharma industry.
Chairperson, is it only me that is now not hearing anything more?
I'm also experiencing the same problem. Dr. Lubis, are you still in the meeting?
lost him.
What happened?
Okay. Hello, Dr. Lewis, how are you? The system kicked you out, eh? Or you try to reconnect us fine. I will convey the message.
Thank you so much. Okay, thanks. Colleagues, he's trying to reconnect. I'm still waiting for Dr. Lubisi to reconnect.
I just admitted him back into the meeting, Chair. I'm sure he should be up any second now.
Okay, that's fine. Thanks, Brian.
Apologies, Chair. We're back with a small power failure. It's back again. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you clearly now.
Okay, we were at the point where we, the MTT, said we did not find any evidence in support or in contradiction of the assertion made by the SANDF in relation to SAPRA's approach in its dealings on interferon alpha. 2B. The MTT decided neither to discount nor to affirm this claim by the leadership of the SANDF. However, what we can affirm is the common cause in relation to the political economy of the pharmaceutical industry in South Africa, namely the oligarchic nature of the industry dominated by near monopolies largely headquartered in Western capital. Next slide, please. The procurement of the interferon. The MTT established that the responsibility to procure interferon alpha 2B was placed on the logistics division of the SANDF by the military command camp, because generally the logistics division is the one that procures. The procurement office is located in the logistics. However, the identity of the persons who provided the log division with specifications, including quantities to be procured, was generally hugely disputed among members of the senior members of the defense. The MTT established that SAMS under General Davula identified the need order interferon to treat 100,000 members of the SANDF, and 100,000 members were quoted, which this was contained in a classified letter signed by General Shoko on the 8th of April. The MTT established that the letter had been drafted by the office of the then Surgeon General, Lieutenant General Davula. Next slide. The procurement was supposedly conducted under an existing bilateral agreement between Cuba and South Africa. This agreement is a public document. It was signed publicly in Pretoria on the 10th of January on our side, on the South African side, by the then Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, and on the Cuban side by the then Cuban Vice President, Mr. Ulysses Rosales del Toro. Now, based on this government-to-government agreement that was signed by Minister Sisulu, the then-chief of the SANDF, General Shoke, subsequently signed two military-to-military agreements with Cuba on the 18th of August 2014. These agreements, under the rubric of Operation Tufano, were contract TI-17-001 South Africa, meant to provide for collaboration on professional and vocational and technical services, and contract TI-17-002 South Africa to provide for collaboration on vocational training services. It is common cause to those who are familiar with these contracts that various supplements of these two contracts have since been signed between the SANDF and the Cuban Revolutionary Armed Forces for specific services. It is in this regard that supplement number 10 to contract TI-17-001 South Africa was specifically signed on the 28th of April 2020 to formalize an agreement on the supply of Heberon Alpha R human recombinant Alpha 2B interferon. Supplement number 10 was signed by the then chief of the Defense Force, General Shoke, on behalf of the SANDF, and by the Director General of the Cuban state-owned entity, the Import and Export Cuban Company for Technical Products, known as Techno Import Enterprise, the Director General of which is Mr. Herberto Sanchez Alena. Next slide. The leadership of the SANDF is of the view that the bilateral agreement signed by Minister Sisulu in 2012 and the subsequent military agreement, contract TI-17-001, provided the Defense Force the authority to procure interferon without following normal supply chain management processes, as stipulated in Section 217 of the Constitution, Section 38 and 45 of the Public Finance Management Act, the Treasury Regulation, as well as DOD procedures set out in JDP 003/2004, processes and procedures for the procurement and sales in respect of commercial goods and services. The SANDF, the leadership of the SANDF cited urgency and the fact that they are fighting an unknown war for their decision to not follow the processes as indicated in the list of documents I've just read above. Now, there is a further argument that at the time the SANDF procured the interferon, Cuba was the sole supplier of Heberon Alpha R human recombinant Alpha 2B interferon the world over. The People's Republic of China, which initially also ordered vast amounts of interferon from Cuba as part of its arsenal against COVID-19, subsequently developed its own capability to manufacture interferon. The AG gave the Department of Defense a qualified audit opinion for the 2020-2021 financial year for, among other reasons, the irregular expenditure of 2.1 billion rand, which included 33 million rand for the procurement of interferon from Cuba without approval from SAPRA. The AG further issued a notice of material irregularity on the failure to comply with the Medicines and Related Substances Act to the accounting officer of the DOD, Ambassador Pujo, on the 13th of August 2021. Further, the time of completing our report, it is worth noting that the AG flagged only the irregularity of procuring the interferon without SAPRA's approval, and not an irregularity related to supply chain management lapses. We have learned that subsequently, after the completion of our report, at a presentation to the Portfolio Committee on the 1st of December 2021, the AG now has raised issues related to supply chain management on this matter. But at the time they issued the management letter for the 2020-2021 financial year to the Department of Defense, no such matter was raised. As indicated above, the initial order or request for interference was made in a letter signed by the chief, then chief of the on the 8th of April, which also ordered the deployment of various Cuban medical practitioners, specifically 31 of them, to fight COVID-19. And there were different professionals, not one set of medical practitioners, different types. The letter of 8th April made a request for interference to treat 100,000 people, as indicated earlier. The figure of 1.2 million doses was stipulated by the head of the medical services of the Cuban Revolutionary Armed Forces in response to General Shoker's letter of 8 April, requesting doses for 100,000 people. The FAR then indicated that to treat 100,000 people would require 1.2 million doses. The South African Embassy in Cuba informed the Cuban Ministry of Foreign Affairs through a note verbal that the aircraft collecting the Cuban medical brigade and medication, including the interferon, would leave South Africa on Thursday, the 23rd of April, 2020. This was accordingly acknowledged by the Cuban embassy in South Africa in a note verbal to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation in South Africa. Next slide, please. The first consignment of 130,000 vials arrived in the country on the 27th of April. The invoice for this consignment, invoice number S0080, dated the 30th of April 2010, indicates a cost of $2,015,000. Second point, consignment of 709,594 vials arrived in the country on the 7th of July. The invoice for this consignment, number S0082, dated 2 July 2020, indicates a cost of $10,998,707. Chairperson will keep these figures in US dollars because the expectation was that the FNDF would translate this to rand value on the day they are paid, using the actual rand-dollar exchange rate on the day of payment. That's why we keep these figures in US dollars and not translate them to rand. The third consignment of 131,101 arrived on the 17th of August 2020. Therefore, a total of 970,695 vials were delivered to the FN, to the firms base depot in Pretoria at a total amount of $15,045,772.50. Therefore, if the SNDF had ordered 1.2 million, it means at that time, when the three consignments had arrived, there was still an outstanding 229,305 buyers that had not yet been received from Cuba at that time, giving that contingent liability as indicated. Next slide, please. The then Surgeon General, Dr. Zola Dabula, was asked by General Shoker to represent the SNDF in welcoming the Cuban Medical Brigade at the Air Force Base Waterloo on the 27th of April. And at around noon on the 27th of April, Colonel Lorraine May, then officer commanding the SA Military Health Base Depot, received a telephone call from Colonel Gomane, who informed her to be ready to receive the interferon for cold storage at the base depot. We subsequently learned that Colonel Gomane is based at the Operation Tusano office in the logistics division of the Defense Force. Colonel May immediately called Lieutenant Colonel E.F. Osborne to mobilize base depot staff to go to the depot to receive the interferon. According to Colonel May, Lieutenant Colonel Osborne managed to find Major Murray to help with the storage of the interferon at the depot. Other staff members were not available, as it was a public holiday. The evidence shows that the team that transported the interferon from Air Force Base Waterloo and Oar Tambo International Airport were fully aware of the temperature requirements of the draft. These vials were placed in polystyrene containers and covered in iceberg with icebergs, and each of them had a lead. The interferon was counted by the base depot staff led by Kenneth Osborne the next day on the 28th of April in order to double check that the number of boxes and vials had been delivered, that had been delivered the day before, actually matched the quantities that had been shown in the import documentation. The quantities in the import documentation were indeed confirmed by the counting done by the base depot officers. There were claims made at the doors that the doors of the refrigerator at the base depot where the interferon was stored were dysfunctional. The MTT investigated this and found that the claim that the doors of the refrigerator or refrigerators at the base depot were dysfunctional, we found this claim to be unsubstantiated and is in fact sounds more like a fitness of a rather fertile imagination. The refrigerator had also had other items such as standard vaccine and other medication of the Defense Force. Due to the sensitivities around interferon, Colonel May advised the MTT that she took a decision to move the interferon to another more secure refrigerator, which had also left traffic. The refrigerator is also fully functional and is monitored for temperature twice a day. The Auditor General, the Auditor General, using the temperature monitoring gadgets attached to each batch of the interferon, made a finding that up to 39% of the interferon could have been exposed to temperature outside the 2 to 8 degrees Celsius range for up to 20 hours. When asked about this finding, the AG clarified that their finding did not mean that the interferon integrity had been compromised as a result. All they were pointing out is that up to 39% of the interferon could have been exposed to temperatures outside this, and they were using this yellow gadget which you could plug onto a computer and read the temperature. This gadget was meant to track the temperature from the time the interferon left the CIGP to the time it arrived at the SAMS base depot in Pretoria throughout. Now, obviously, using the AG methodology, this figure is an extrapolation from a sample that the AG had taken from the sample. From the various batches. That is those batches. The AG did not take any interferon, must be clear, from the base depot at all. This led SAPRA, when the AG raised this matter, this led SAPRA to randomly then take 54 vials from the different batches of the interferon for testing. SAPRA tested a random sample of 3 vials. The results from the SAPRA test clearly indicated that the integrity of the interferon remained intact. In this regard, the MTT now regards the public discussion on the integrity of the interferon stored at the military health base depot as closed and no longer has any merit. Payment for the interferon, want to raise this matter, Chairperson. The Cuban state-owned company Techno Import issued the SNDF as indicated earlier with 3 invoices for the 3 consignments. The invoices were received by the Operation Tucano office at the Logistics Division. Invoice number SS0 SS 00080, which is the first invoice, issued on the 30th of April for the 130 vials, total the figure that I indicated, $2,015,000. This invoice was misclassified as payment for vocational training services under Operation Tupac, and was initially recorded as such in the books of the DOD. This was picked up by the AG. AG picked this up and raised it with the DOD. This was subsequently then corrected by the DOD on the 5th of October 2020 and correctly classified as drugs under Operation Notlela. Invoice number S0080 was approved for payment by the Chief of Logistics, Lieutenant General J.S. Mbuli, or under Financial Authority 1229-8052 on the 30th of June 2020. Amount of R33,496,973.60 was ultimately paid for invoice S0080. Which was based on the rand dollar exchange rate on that day. At the time of the completion of our report, invoice number S0082 had not been paid by the SANDF, as well as invoice S0086, it had also not been paid. The CFO, Mr. Stuart Sokela, disputed the invoices for the second and third consignment, citing irregular procurement processes that were undertaken during the procurement of the interferon, even though at that point the AG had not raised SCM issues with the procurement of the interferon from the document. The Cuban embassy in South Africa, under a note verbal, wrote a letter to the then Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, Minister Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula, requesting the return of 500,000 vials of the interferon alpha 2B for urgent use in Cuba, given the real risk that the interferon could expire before it can be used in South Africa. The Cuban government promised to replace the 500,000 vials should the regulatory issues dogging the use of interferon be resolved at a later date. Next slide, please. The point is then out that there was an impending, there were outstanding issues which the DOD had to deal with. One was the matter of the payment of the second and third consignment which had arrived. The second one was the outstanding approval of the use of the drug by SAPRA, which at the time of the writing of the report had been complicated further by the stance which had been taken by SAPRA to move in to destroy if the medicines were not returned to Cuba. And we indicated to the minister that the three sets of batches of the medication would expire in March, April, and July 2022, respectively, posing a risk, serious risk, of fruitless expenditure for the DOD. We indicated that the DOD faced an impending crisis. I won't go into detail with this chairperson. All what we are saying here is that even if SAPRA were to approve the clinical trial for 8,000 members of the SAPRA, it was no longer avoidable at the end of October for some of the drugs, and in fact most of them, to expire in March and April 2022. We made that prediction that in our calculation of the figure, we thought it is too late, even if SAPRA were to approve the trial. Some of these vials were to expire, unless SAPRA was going to say, we give you permission for bulk use, which of course had been rejected earlier by staff. So we put this impending crisis for the SANDF. So Then we say, if we go to slide 32, we said that the defense force really faced two scenarios, what we call the best case scenario and the doomsday scenario. However, we said in summary, the best case scenario would only see the utilization of 211,101 out of the delivered 974,695 fires, if you, of course, subtracted those that were taken by SAPRA and the Defense Force itself. Now, this only represented 21.75% of the received fires. So the best case scenario is the use of 21.75%. And the worst case in doomsday scenario is the use of nothing, of none of the fires. And we then say, we advise, next slide, we then advise the minister that actually there isn't much of a difference between the best case scenario and the doomsday scenario. Whichever way, heads you lose, tail you lose. That's where the Defense Force was at that time. It was checkmate time. We raised that matter. The slide 33 tries to talk to them. And we made, as we conclude, Chair, we made two key recommendations. We said to the minister, we advise you should consider very urgently acceding to the Cuban request to return 500,000 vials or even more for urgent use in Cuba before expiry of the medication. This, we said, should be accompanied by the high level diplomatic engagement with the Cuban government to manage the potentially serious political fallout that would result from budget. Chairperson, it is common cause that the Republic of South Africa post-1994 has a very close relationship with the Cuban government. The military in South Africa has a very close relationship with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Cuba. And we warned that as we give you this advice to return this, there might be some serious fallouts here. So please engage, if you were to consider this, engage the Cuban government so that you mitigate, you mitigate against this fallout. The second recommendation is a broad recommendation which basically talks to consequence management. We said to the minister, he should consider taking this report and taking it to the appropriate structures, particularly the IG, Inspector General of the Department of Defense, and the Provost Marshal General of the Department of Defense, for purposes of those officials determining whether any or not any steps should be taken against any person or groups of persons mentioned in this report, in terms of the PFMA and particularly the Medicines and Related Substances Act. Because in the SNDF, there's a way of dealing with discipline. If you are accused, if there is an issue against you, you go through what's called a board of inquiry. You are not tried and found guilty by a ministerial task team. It doesn't work that way. There's a board of inquiry that is set for you, and you have to respond to them. Chairperson, subsequent to the submission of our report, we have learned that one of our recommendations has been acceded to, but we are not in a position to talk to it because it happened after we finished our report, and as a lawyer, you would know that once a committee such as ours hands over a report to the person who commissioned the report, that committee becomes functus officio. So therefore we are functus, and anything that happened out after we submitted our report is something that we cannot engage with. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lubisi, for your presentation. I thought I should allow the presentation because in the style of preparing slides, there is information that you reserve for oral presentation. That at times it's better you wait until the presentation has been made to determine whether you still want more information. So thank you very much. Indeed, you have added some information as you're doing the presentation as expected. I think I was not wrong in allowing you to do so. Right, and that's the first part. And I know that the AG has, sent me a letter which I've circulated to all members of the committee, where they comment on one of the findings. I want to believe that the presenter did touch on it. But I would still ask the AG just to check if there's still more that they want to say on that matter. One, and then two, the chair of the board of SABRA has indicated that she too they would want to, make a comment, one or two, on the findings. And then thirdly, the SNDF. At the end, Dr. Lubisi says they've subsequently learned that one of the recommendations has been acceded to, and I don't know who talked to that, whether it is the chief of the SNDF or the SECDEF. Why I'm saying this is to allow first so that we get the complete picture of where Julius Jonker or Jonker, please, can you mute? And it's important that we get that confirmed because it tells us what the state of the whole discussion is, the state of the status, the current status. So it will give us the current status of the position of the drugs in relation to the discussion that we are having today. So now let me come back first. Let me start with AG. AG, let me invite you so that you read into the record and also indicate whether in the presentation that issue has not been addressed to your satisfaction. AG?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, indeed the presenter did touch on the matter during the presentation, but I think I must just also from our side just clarify the matter. It relates to slide 22 of the presentation where the statement is made that the Auditor General flagged only the irregularity of procuring the interferon without the South African Health Procurement Regulatory Authority Agency SAPA approval and not an irregularity relating to the supply chain management process lapses. We did, however, raise a finding in the second report, special report on COVID-19 in 2020, where we highlighted shortcomings relating to the procurement of the drug, and these included the use of an open-ended contract under Operation Tusano for procuring the drug. Furthermore, during the final audit of the 2021 financial year, we also raised a specific finding in the management report relating to all the procurement under Project Tusano, we are finding is that that procurement is not in compliance with Section 217 of the Constitution, or with the National Treasury instruction notes and prescripts, and as a result, all the expenditure incurred under Operation Tusano should be regarded as irregular expenditure, which was at that point in time in excess of 1 billion rand. The department disagrees with that finding of the Auditor General, and therefore it formed part of the qualification on the completeness of irregular expenditure in the financial statements. The audit report was issued on 17 September 2021. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. But I think the point that is critical is that at the time of writing the report, I think the position was correct. It's true that subsequently you've then raised, in the subsequent report, you raised further findings on the two contracts. All right, and now let me check with Sapra, Professor Reeves. I understand the CEO is also in the meeting.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Deputy Minister, members of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, and members of the MTT, Dr. Lucy, and colleagues from the SA India. The issue I would like to raise just at the beginning, I'd just like to raise two issues. One is a more general issue that perhaps gives a little bit more context. But from the SAPRA's point of view and from the SAPRA board perspective and from the executive team, unfortunately, we have not had sight of this report. We were sent the set of PowerPoint slides that we've just been shown. Thank you for that. So we're only able to respond to the slides. And what we would request is that we do get the full report, because we have noted, as you could expect from a review like this, that there are some things that would need to be corrected that are quite significant just in the slides. Dr. Sametti will just give a very high-level comment on that. But I just want to say something else, because I do think it adds context. I think that first slide about the context in the early days of the pandemic is extremely important. Interferon at that time, right way back at the beginning, was one of the drugs, of many drugs, that we really hoped would make a difference to COVID, either in prevention or for treatment. Subsequently, there were some trials done, and unfortunately, interferon hasn't been shown to be effective either for prevention or for treatment. And this is the view of the World Health Organization. Within South Africa, it's the view of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Therapeutics. And we have another committee called the National Essential Medicines List Committee, which is focusing on COVID products only. And similarly, they have found no evidence to support this. But the point was, at the time when these negotiations began, there was hope. And subsequently, many of the therapeutics that we've had hope for have had to fall away, and we're left with not nearly as many as we started with. So I think that's an important piece of context about why people were reaching out. And remember, when this all started, we also didn't have effective vaccines. So indeed, people were looking for solutions. But as I say, as we sit here today, unfortunately, what we might have hoped for with interferon or with many other therapeutics hasn't come to being. However, we did send a letter, Honourable Chairperson, to yourself, and I would like to ask Dr. Sametti just to raise some very high-level issues that I think are quite important in this understanding. The last thing I would say is, indeed, I would support Dr. Lubusi's comment that SAPRA, as an incredibly important regulatory authority for the health sector, would be very keen to work very closely with the SANDF, and that's why we are extremely keen to get a common understanding of the legislative framework that we work in, because I think that might be one of the misunderstandings here. If I may stop here and ask Dr. Sametti to make some comments, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Dr. Sametti?
Thank you very much, Helen, and good day, Honourable Members. Good day, Chair. as well as the MTT. And thank you again for inviting us to this meeting to listen in on this presentation, but also to share our preliminary views on this. As the chair has said, we haven't seen the full report, and so once we receive that, we will give substantive comments on it, because there's quite a number of what we view as inaccuracies in this report that we would like to categorically respond to. And in doing so, I think I just want to state, I think, some important factors that need to be considered as we deliberate on this matter. The first point is around the object of substance, and our objects are clearly outlined in the Medicines and Related Substances Act, and it speaks to our role in terms of ensuring that there's access to safe, quality, and effective medicines. It also speaks to our oversight role when it comes to the investigation, inspection, registration, and oversight of clinical trials for these health products. The Act also, Chair, if I could just expand on that, it indicates that we need to act in the interest of the public without any exception, as we make safe, quality, and efficacious products available to the country. Now, in saying this, it is important that we note that the Medicines and Related Substances Act specifically binds the state, and all state entities are required to comply with the law. Nowhere in the Medicines Act is there an exemption. We've also looked at this matter in terms of the relevant act for the South African National Defense, and nowhere there do we see any exemption when it comes to health products. And therefore, military personnel in any work related to health products that need authorization need to comply with the Medicines Act. I want to also highlight, Minister, that we've been in engagement with the SNDF and the Military Health Services, indeed as the MTT has shown, since 2020, in trying to address this matter, and correctly so. You know, being both entities of the state, we needed to find a mechanism to address this. I want to highlight that the offer, as it stated in the report, that there was a withdrawal of the offer on the clinical trial. That is indeed incorrect. There was a submission to clinical trial after many delays. We responded, we gave queries on this matter, and these were not adequately responded to. This led to the clinical trial not being authorized. So it wasn't a withdrawal of the offer, it was a clinical trial that was not authorized because it didn't meet the regulatory requirements. But also in our efforts of trying to cooperate, we also evoked the intergovernmental framework, as the MTT clearly indicates that there are mechanisms in place for us as entities of the state to engage when there are such matters. We evoked this. We didn't get much support when this was communicated, and we asked that we utilize this mechanism. If I could just reflect on the next part around the import of the medicines, indeed, as the report says, that we had insufficient scientific evidence that would enable us to make authorization for the product. And then lastly, Chair, just the last point, I'm wrapping up. Sorry, Chair. Apologies for that.
Let me tell you why I was raising this point. We all have not seen the full report, and we don't know what is contained therein. Maybe the issues they are addressing would be in the report itself. I don't know how, to what extent you want to take this discussion. Over to you.
Okay. No, not to a large extent, Chair, and as you said, we would really appreciate the opportunity to give a full response to that. I just want to just raise one last matter, and I'm sure the SNDF would have also indicated that the latest feedback that we have as SAFSA on this matter, and again demonstrating you know, that we were operating as per the prescripts of the Medicines Act, is that we received communication yesterday from the SNDF that they have repatriated Hadron Alpha, and they provided us with the, all the evidence that's required. We are busy reviewing that. So as we sit today, we've got that confirmation from them, and we will then, you know, be reviewing that. But again, thank you for the opportunity, and we look forward to the full report.
Thank you so much. All right. Okay. SecDef, or the chief, do you want to
to tighten up the loose ends like the other two agencies have done before I allow members to ask questions of clarity and make their own comments.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Chairperson, I think the report has been presented by the MTT, and as it was mentioned, that the report really belongs to the minister as the person who initiated the process. So we will all comb through the report and raise the issues that really need to be raised. And then, of course, there are clear recommendations as well that come out of the report. And then I think, Chairperson, we did maybe just to confirm that, yes, there is the process that can also be followed if two government institutions don't find each other, which is through the Intergovernmental Act. And I think the presenter of the report did allude to that. And so, Chairperson, I think that from my side, I would rather I have the chief of the SANDF deal with the matter, because then, as the report has alluded to earlier, was that the matter was largely also discussed around the Military Command Council, and the chief is the person that is, and that also chairs the meeting, and I think they would be much in a much better position than myself to articulate on some of the issues that have been raised, and maybe also to get their aspects on the whole issue. So, if you allow me, Chair, and through you, DM, maybe we will let the chief of the SANDF to come on.
Thank you very much, Secretary. Now the opportunity to for the chief just to say one or two things.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. Allow me to put three things in context without any form of accusation to any sister state department, nor as a subjective defense on the part of the DOD. Honorable Chair, the South African National Defense Force indeed had an engagement from time to time with SAFRA, starting off with an application for the use of Hebron R as an immunomodulator among stable COVID-19, which was explored by SEMS from the 27th of August 2020. On the 5th of October, SAFRA granted us the Section 21 approval for Hebron R to be used as an immunomodulator for one patient. That was the initial engagement that we had with SAFRA, and I wouldn't like to really delve much in terms of other further engagement that actually saw us seeing that like more of the goalpost moving to the right. I will just cite that we also, on the same note, applied for a bulk trial, which was actually rejected. But we then went back and tried to apply again for the Section 21 for one session again. But when we started to go back into the electronic application form, we found that certain fields were closed. And that was now the beginning of a long struggle of engagement in trying to resolve the impasse. Honorable Chair, allow me not to delve much on that, but I just wanted to indicate that yes, indeed, there has been interaction between SAFRA and the DOD. I want to also, Honorable Chair, bring the next issue that the committee must actually be made aware of. In the matter pertaining to the port of entry of interferon 2B via Air Force Base Waterproof. We do really respect the laws of our country, and we do really respect that in terms of the Act, the identified port of entry excludes Air Force Base Waterproof. Yes, that we acknowledge. But the Act the DOD, but the Act is equally silent on the interface with the Defence Act on the basis that the SNDF has a responsibility for force protection as well as on matters that are related to nuclear, biological, chemical warfare. And as such, Waterproof Air Force Base, being the Air Force Base of the Defence Force, is the right place for the Defence Force to engage on whatever form of activity. I want to say this, Honorable Chair, on the basis that when interference was being important, the Navy joined and through the National Coordinating Command Council declared all posts closed as a result of the declaration of the state of national disaster on the 26th of March 2020. And on that basis, it left the Defence Force with only one solution: if we had to protect our soldiers and if we had identified that medicine as the one of the ways that will protect the people that will be getting into the field in the first cold phase of the battle, we had to use either Waterproof or any other military base. That is the second issue that I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee. Honorable Chair, I also just want to thank SAPRA and the committee to say that in line with the FTP recommendations and the instructions of SAPRA for us to either take back the medicine or get the medicine destroyed or find ourselves with the medicine that are now that has expired, the South African National Defence Force has since complied and sent the medicine back to Cuba. We are currently writing letters both to SAPRA and also to the Auditor General and the interested parties that we felt we should engage after we have complied. I submit.
Thank you very much, Chief of the South African Defence Force, for the comments. Colleagues, we have listened to the presentation and the comments from the other three agencies, AG South Africa, SAPRA, and the Department / SNDF. Colleagues, the minister, who's the owner of the property owner of this report, is not in the meeting. I don't know how much discussion we want to take in her absence, number one. And number two, she has not made any determination as to when the report will be released, if it will ever be released. My feeling is that we defer full discussion on the matter until the time the minister is back, save for just questions of clarity and comments of a general nature. I don't know if you do support me on that one. Mr. Marae, you wanted to say something right at the beginning. I'm not too sure if it's not time. You have not been covered. If you have not been covered, I grant you the opportunity. Mr. Marae.
I've actually raised my hand to ask, you know, you've said that we have the opportunity to interact with and to make comments in that regard. So, some of it has been addressed. And I think what is very important, Chair, is that, you know, my biggest concern is that is the actual report. And I think SAPRA also reflected on that in terms of what is in the report. You will recall that last year, I think it was just before we broke for the elections, that Minister Modise has promised that within 3 weeks we will get the report. So I hope that the minister will get the report, and I think from today you will also have experienced that without the report, it is so difficult to get an objective view. Can I just ask you, in terms of your basically request or suggestion that we defer discussions, will the ministerial task team at that stage also be present, and SAPRA, because I have got questions for clarity to both of them. So if they will be present at that meeting with the minister, then I can defer my questions of clarity. Otherwise, I would very much like to pose those questions to them, if you will allow me.
Okay. Let me hear what Honorable Mutle has to say. I'm sure he will also touch on the same issue as well. Honorable Mutle?
No, thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. I want to support your proposal on the basis that it will give an opportunity to the minister to consolidate her own report out of this report, to say what is it that they have actioned out of the report of the MTT, and it will also grant an opportunity to bodies like SAPRA, because seemingly they want to dispute some of the findings that the MTT has made. By the time we meet, let's ensure that everybody has consolidated and we are able to deal with the matter once and for all and put it to rest. Thank you very much.
Okay. No, thanks. Thank you so much. I think there is support for the deferral of the discussion on the matter until the time when the minister is back, and so maybe that's okay. Just before I conclude the show, let me check who else so that I don't shut colleagues out. Shelembe, you seem to be the last person, at least from the committee side, to speak on the matter. Shelembe?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I must concur, with the other members that it's better if this matter is deferred until the minister has a look on it and be available for us. But Chairperson, my request, I don't know, to other members, as we know that, each and every minute, the money is stolen from government departments, and people, just go without being penalized for those things. Just checking the look, I think this matter is very, very urgent, if you look at it. Now, I'm not getting the clear picture as to when can I be, I don't want to say guaranteed, but I want to, to be put on a picture that the minister will be available to us as a matter of urgency. Because now, if say we just say when the minister is available or when the minister comes back, I'm left open thing that I'm not sure, or can't we put the time frames that not later than that, so that we know that the minister will try her best to ensure that if she avails herself to us and the matter is dealt urgently. Otherwise, Chairperson, take my words. People each and every minute are thinking of how to steal. Look at the department now, it's like collapsing. There's no money to those projects. But when it comes to those things like where they can make or can do the wrong things, the money is available. But when it comes to the issues where the soldiers, they want something, there is no money, they can't work on the border lines because there's no money, they can't fix the cars. But when it comes to issues, money is available. I'm the question, Chairperson, your wisdom. how can we ensure that, I mean, the minister avails herself as a matter of urgency? I don't want, I mean, to delay, to have this matter delayed any longer, Chairperson. Thank you.
No, thanks. Look, actually, it's not out of her choosing that she is not in the meeting. She's not well. And let us give her time to recuperate. And she's not just gone a wall. There is a valid apology. So, and therefore, unless we, I think we don't doubt that she is not well. So obviously, she would, once she has recuperated and she's fit and discharged, she would then come back and do her work. So it's difficult for me to say when, but the work of the committee will continue. But this one, obviously, is subject to her being present. And so I will discuss with her the request for the report to be released, so that when she says no, it must be on convincing grounds why the report cannot be released, one. And two, there is also a request from SAPRA that the report be shared with them, so that they are then able to respond on issues for the benefit of this committee. AG South Africa is also an interest party in the matter. They too expect a full report, because it's difficult to report, to respond comprehensively to slides. Like we said, slides, yes, but in oral you get some more information, and but the detail is in the actual report. So it's critical that at least the report be shared with those bodies, AG, SAPRA, and ourselves as an interested party in the matter. But I will raise that with the minister and also inform her that we have deferred discussion on the matter to the time when she is present in the meeting. DM, are you happy with this, Honourable Deputy Minister?
Chairperson, thank you very much, and to honourable members of the committee. Chair, what I can say from my side is that indeed the matter is better concluded with the advice of the executive authority, the minister, taken into account. I do concur with that sentiment of the committee. But secondly, to say that the reports of the fraternal statutory bodies and their views on the MTT, the Ministerial Task Team report, are noted and are taken to heart, and will assist in a very responsible an appropriate conclusion to the matter. The minister will be able to share with the committee her views on the recommendation of this MTT report. There are basically two recommendations there, and as you would have noted, the one has almost like, you know, been made the, you know, water under the bridge, but there is a second recommendation about, you know, processes administratively go that should be considered. The minister will be able to speak to those. from where I sit, Chair, I think the meeting was a very helpful exercise for us to be on the same wavelength, and now we're talking, you know, solutions and way forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Chair, MTT, I'm sorry, I should have called you in first before the Deputy Minister. I don't think there is anything really reserved for you because we are deferring the discussion. And you have presented your report, and you are now functus officio as Dr. Lubisi has said it. But I'm not closing you if there's any critical issue that you would have wanted to make.
No, thank you, Chip. I'm covered.
You are covered. Thank you so much. I think, colleagues, we dealt with this matter and in a mature way, and we are actually allowing all agencies to express themselves, so that by the time the matter finally lands before us, we have received a proper, well-considered advice from all the three agencies that we started this matter with at the beginning: SAPRA, AG, and DOD stroke SNDF. So we started this matter with them. But of course, all of it coordinated under the offices or the authority of the minister. With that, colleagues,
my apologies. Just my question to you, will the, because I have got other one question for clarity, will the ministerial task team and SAPRA then also be obliged to attend that meeting so that we can give, you know, because there's a vast amount of anomalies in this report as presented to us, so will they be present so that we can ask questions for clarity? Otherwise, I must do it now. And then secondly, it is just said that they have complied with the one recommendation, and that's returning of bales. I just want to know if they can give us an indication of how many bales was returned, because the recommendation is for 500,000 or even more. So if maybe the chief can just give us an indication if it's more than the 500,000, and if possible, how many was returned.
I think that is fair to ask that question. And then you are right that if we are deferring discussion on the matter, the questions that you would have asked, you know, and in which require them to respond, if they're not in the meeting, it would not be responded to. It's proper that we even defer that to that time. We'll invite them. This time, we'll send them a proper invite to this meeting. I'm sure by then we would have received their written comments on the report. No, I do grant that, Mr. Mare. But there's a second critical question that you asked, and to the Chief of the South African Defence Force, as to if they say they've complied with one recommendation, to what extent has that been complied with? Is it to the full extent of what is recommended in that first recommendation, or part thereof? Or they've exceeded what was recommended? The chief?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. I just want to indicate that we have returned all that was required to be returned. And so we haven't confined ourselves to the 500,000 vials. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
So you have returned whatever was available to be returned.
That's everything. That's fantastic news.
Now we're looking at the general. Okay. No, it's fine. But obviously, we'll get that when
the minister finally present the thing, the details of it. No. I think she has responded, Mr. Malik. I mean, he has responded. I'm sure we are satisfied with this.
I'm certainly not satisfied, but he has responded. So that's the only truth. it's now up for speculation, which is bad. It's not transparent.
General, you are opening yourself up to more questions. You can't be categorical on this one.
Honorable Chair and members of the committee, I was very open to indicate that all that was required to be returned, we have returned. And that is over and above the 500 that was depleted. SAPRA has received a report so far, and I think during the deliberation that will also come out in the next session. I would like to indicate, Honorable Chair, that the minister would like to be very exact. And when we speak off line, it's not in the way that we would like to respond to this matter. And as I said, we have returned all what was required to be returned, and we will. Over and above the 500 as recommended by the MTT. Thank you, Honorable.
That's fine. I hear you. Thank you very much, Chief. Colleagues, I think what is left for me now is to thank the Deputy Minister, SecDef, the Chief of the Southern Defense Force, and the Chair of SAPRA and the team and AG South Africa and the team and then say that they are free to leave the meeting. This item is now concluded for today, and the discussion deferred to a later date. Thank you so much, colleagues. We can then move to the next item.
Thank you very much, Chair, for having us.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, just before we proceed,
yes.
Obviously, you know, the media was part of the meeting, and we don't want to make this a sensational thing. But all of this started 2 years ago, and the National Defence Force and Department of Defence is supposed to be the best example of discipline. And what we have seen and what we have experienced is quite the contrary. Even the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure has responded better to other questions that the DoD has not responded to, or the SNDF. So somewhere along the line, we will have to have a very heart-to-heart, confidential, professional, collegial discussion also with the minister and maybe the SecDef as well, because, I mean, it is very, very frustrating if things are dragged out. And the Defence Force is supposed to be the most disciplined organisation and department in this whole government, and it seems like quite the contrary, especially if you look at the SIU report that has just been released yesterday as well. So I must just register that, and really somewhere along the line there must be a discussion. We have talked about this, that it must improve, and then we see snippets of improvements, and then it's fallen back again to the old way. So I don't know who is influencing what, but it is not acceptable the way that it's been dragged out so far. So thank you for that, just raising that with you. Thank you.
All right. Okay, colleagues, thanks. Let's move. Brian, this has just been the program. I just want to indicate
indicate the change that we are effecting. But I have, it's a closed meeting, right? The closed meeting was supposed to be on the 16th of February. And now it coincides with the debate on the state of the national address. Am I correct, Brian?
That is correct, sir.
All right. And we thought we don't want to interfere with that. We better move it to a date that, of course, there is never a date that is completely free, but at least we thought 9th of March is less encumbered. So to take a discussion that General Yam, representing the defense, said he would want it transacted in a closed meeting. All right. So do you accept this amendment, colleagues?
Just from my side, yes, I accept either that change. And I will support that. However, in terms of today's meeting, obviously we must now first find out how serious the illness of the minister is, and that.
No.
I just want to flag that we have to be flexible. That should the minister become available.
No, wait. Let's finish one item.
So I'm on this point, because otherwise we are deferring the meeting with the minister to the second or the third term. And my request is just that if it happens that the minister is available or becomes available, and you know when that will be, that we be flexible to even move some of this to the third term, to the second term, to be able to accommodate the minister. That is my only request, that we keep it open.
A valid request. Okay,
yeah, that's
also, Brian, please, let's note it that, let's keep an eye that we'll prioritize the reinstatement. I think that's what Mr. Murray is suggesting, the reinstatement of the discussion on the interferon.
Okay, sure.
Thanks, Mr. Murray. All right. Colleagues, is there any other item, colleagues, that on this agenda, in the program? But we're just introducing this one change, and Mr. Murray is raising a matter arising from the earlier discussion. So that concludes the discussion on the program. Can we deal with the minutes, colleagues?
Chairperson, just another question from me with regards to programs, and it's not about this program. I know that last year we talked about the possibility of maybe have oversight now in end of January, and it was indicated to us that there's challenges and that it's the chair of chairs. But now I picked up that there are various committees that are on oversight all over the country. Why was it not granted to us if it was granted to the other committees? I just picked that up, and I was just saying to myself, why not us? So maybe you've got information.
I don't. I certainly don't. I also became jealous. Brian, what was the reason that we couldn't have an oversight? In January?
There was no provision in the House Chair's guidelines to say committees may embark on such. So I'm not sure how those committees got to, but I know that some of them are doing public hearings, but I also know that there are a few that are doing oversight, although there was no provision for such in the House Chair's guidelines.
No. I understand exactly what you are saying. And maybe in the future, that's what Mr. Murray is saying. We should try and check if, even if it's not provided, whether it is prohibited to do it outside that environment. That's fine.
We will do it in the future, Mr. Mane. No, thank you so much.
And but then, I'm sorry, Chair, on our current program, we do make provision for towards the end of the term for an oversight. I will be submitting in due course the application for that with you, Chair.
Yes, I saw it is on the program.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, no international visit. When are you leaving us overseas, Chair?
No, why not overseas? Because an international visit can take you to Swaziland. colleagues, let's look at the agenda. Sorry, the minutes. Page one of the minutes. Right. Page two. Right. Page three. Page four. Still dealing with corrections. And hey, where is Sikaba? Hey, where are you on that? The chairperson CV Kaba. Item number six.
Oh.
Ooh.
Okay, move it up.
Okay, that will be corrected. All right. Any? Okay, the last page. Just take us to the last page. Last page. All right. Okay. Colleagues, these are the names. Can I just get any indication of support? Acceptance. Who's moving?
Chair, I move for the acceptance of the minutes.
Welcome. Sister, how are you?
I'm fine, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Right. Sandra has moved. Honorable Bukert has moved. Did I see Shalemba's name? Sent. Colleagues, any second?
Seconded, Chair.
Tabo from honorable member seconded. Okay. Colleagues, thank you very much. The minutes are accepted. Right. Colleagues, I don't know. Is there any other matter that we are not that we've not dealt with Brian?
No, Chair.
It's okay, that's it. Thank you very much. Okay, colleagues.
Yes,
Tabu.
I know it's not part of the agenda, but I think it's imperative that I raise it here so that we consider putting it on our program and get a report on the event of fire that broke at the water group base. Because it's something that is not we have not put in our program, but it's something that the portfolio committee needs to engage with.
Okay, you are right, Peter. Peter Daniels, are you in the meeting? I was going to Brian. Please talk to Peter.
Yes, Chair, I'm in the meeting. Sorry for that.
Sure. And when are we receiving? I think we need to amend the program of the JSCD to incorporate the latest letters of deployment. I think there are two letters of deployment that needed to be incorporated into the program. That's one.
And then, in so doing, let's add this item that Honorable Thabo is talking about, a briefing on the fire at the waterproof Air Force base.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Will do.
You do. Okay. So, TM, it will be accommodated on the JSCD side. Are you happy with that?
No, I'm happy, Chair.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, thank you very much. I thank all of you. I think the meeting started well and it ends well. Thanks. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.